You know, when I first started ministry, I would have at this point said, open your Bibles. These days we don't do that anymore. Get out your cell phone and Google Genesis 22. That's the passage we're going to be looking at today. Genesis 22 says this, as we continue our study of the life of Abraham. Sometime later, God tested Abraham and he said to him, "Abraham, here I am," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you." Early the next morning, Abraham got up, loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servant, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father, "Abraham, father?" "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and wood are here," Isaac said, "but where's the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And the two of them went on together. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided." The angel of the Lord called to Abraham from heaven a second time and said, "I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of their cities, of their enemies, and through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me." We were on vacation a number of years ago, the island of Oahu, and the best place to go snorkeling on Oahu is a nature preserve on the east coast of the island. It's called Hanama Bay. Some of you, I'm sure many of you have been there. It's a sheltered bay. It's nearly closed off to the ocean because the mouth is a relatively small mouth. And so the waters inside this bay are very calm and great place for snorkeling. There's a reef out there where you can see lots of fish and coral. So it's usually very nice there, usually, but not always. The day we went, it was very breezy, and there was a very large swell that happened to be running from just the right direction, so it came right into the mouth of the bay. And so even inside the bay, the waters were very rough. Well, as you're walking down to this bay, this is a nature preserve, so the state controls it, and there are signs posted, you know, warning you, do not stand on the reef. Because if you stand on the reef, you kill the coral. And kill the coral, and then you're not going to have fish and the coral and all of that, so you don't want to stand on the reef. So everybody that goes there wanting to, you know, take care of nature and be able to enjoy all of the beauty of it is committed to not standing on the reef. But you know what? We went out there on that day, and it was rough. And it was just a fight to just not, you know, go under and to just have it, just to stay afloat. And so I noticed at one point, I kind of looked up, and all over in that bay, I could see people standing on the reef. And it was a simple matter of, for them, it came down to survival. If it's a choice between the coral and me being able to survive, I'm standing on the coral. Too bad for the coral, because I'm taking care of me. Now, there is, I think, a spiritual parallel to that. I know you think, yeah, you're a pastor, you think there's a spiritual parallel to everything. Right, of course there is. Often we, God's people, are committed to doing God's will. We say, this is what I want with all of my heart. And we do that right up to the point where we think my survival and my happiness is at stake. And when my survival, as I perceive it, or my happiness is at stake, all of a sudden it's every man for himself. Yeah, doing the God's will is important, but not as important as taking care of me. And we start standing on the reef. Today we're going to look at the example of one person who was at that crucial point, and he refused to compromise. Now, I got to tell you that this story, we just read it, you've seen it, is a bizarre story. It's kind of puzzling. It's uncomfortable because things happen in this story that seem uncharacteristic and even unworthy of God. And I have to tell you, I don't have all of the answers to questions that this story poses. However, I think there are some important things that we can learn from this story. And the interesting thing about this story is it is the climax of the story of Abraham's life. We've been seeing the story of this great man of faith and all of these trials he's been through and the great things he's done and the great faith he's shown and some of his failures. And we get to this place, and this is kind of the pinnacle of his story. This is what we've been building up to all this time. So what happens in this story? Well, you can see the first thing that happens is that God gave Abraham a disturbing order. There are a few incidents in the Bible that when you read in the Old Testament, they cause you some heartburn. It's like, what? Well, this is one of those. Maybe the most disturbing episode in the Old Testament. God tells Abraham to take his son, Isaac, to the region of Moriah. Moriah actually is the area that Jerusalem is and where the actual Temple of Solomon was built. So to that area, you go there, and here's what I want you to do when you get there, Abraham. I want you to kill your son. Sacrifice him to me. Oh, wait a minute. We've had this long wait, and we've been watching Abraham and Sarah go through all these trials. God promises, I'm going to build a great nation for you, Abraham. Going to give you a son. Just keep waiting. Abraham tries to make it happen. God says, no. Just wait. I'll provide. Finally, God provides when it seems impossible. A son is born. Yay. And now here we are a few years later, and God says, okay, you know that son that I promised that I'm going to give you a great nation? He's going to come from this son? Kill him. Take him, put him on an altar. Take his life. Well, that's a bit problematic, don't you think? First of all, we have a terrible moral problem here. One of the Ten Commandments God would give is, you shall not kill. Commit no murder. Now he's telling him, murder your own son. That's God saying, it is my will that you now violate directly my will. That cannot be right, can it? You know, the interesting thing you may have noticed is that Abraham didn't even balk when he heard this command, according to the story. The only thing I can think of that would cause that is human sacrifice, religious human sacrifice, has a long history, and it existed in Abraham's day. It was common in his day. It's interesting, actually, it's common throughout the world. There's a Chinese legend that thousands of people who were human sacrifices are buried in the Great Wall. The Japanese report they had an ancient practice of burying young maidens alive at the base of construction projects as a way to ward off disaster for the construction project. The Aztecs reportedly sacrificed 80,000 people at the reconsecration of one of their great pyramids in 1487. Long history. But the interesting thing is, in the Old Testament, God has consistently and always condemned the practice. He's always been adamantly opposed to it. Leviticus 18:21, addressing the fact that some of Israel's neighbors commonly were sacrificing their children to a god they called Molech, says, you shall not give any of your offspring to offer them to Molech, That's a no-no. Don't do that. Deuteronomy 12:31 calls child sacrifice an abominable act before God. Jeremiah 7:30-31 says that human sacrifice is a detestable act to God. So this is a bit difficult here. God says, this is a terrible thing. Don't ever do it. And then he says to Abraham, now go do that. Kill your son. Wow. So we have a moral problem with it, but there's also a logical problem with it. How in the world is God going to make Abraham's descendants a great nation from Isaac if Isaac is dead? It's like he's killing off the chance for God to fulfill the promise about his descendants. Oh, man, this is puzzling. How do we resolve these concerns? You know, we can say, well, God never intended for Abraham to actually kill his son. And I believe that's actually the case. But, well, does that mean then that God was playing games with Abraham? Was he, like, pulling a mean trick on him? That doesn't seem like something you'd think a holy God would do. What's going on here? Verse 1 tells us, it said that God tested Abraham. The idea wasn't that God was playing a game or trying to be devious. He was putting Abraham's faith to the test. Now, the question is, why would he do that? Did God need to learn about Abraham's character, learn what he was made of? Did he want to see if Abraham really had enough faith to obey him no matter what? No. The truth is that God knew all along what was in Abraham's heart, and God knew what Abraham would do and what he wouldn't do. Well, if that's the case, then why would God test Abraham? If it wasn't for God's benefit, it must have been for Abraham's benefit. God's testing Abraham for Abraham's sake. I'll explain that a little more later. I'm going to come back to that. But what we can learn from that is that there are going to be times in our lives we're going to be tested with things that we don't understand that are deeply troubling. And we need to learn to trust God even in those kinds of times when it makes no sense. That's what this story is telling us, as we're going to see in a minute. So what happens? Well, we can see in this passage, Abraham obeyed. He submitted. He headed out with Isaac, fully intending, apparently, to carry out God's orders. And I can't imagine the turmoil he must have experienced during that trip. You know, he must have been just going, I can't do, how am I going to do this? I can't do this. This is my son. I love my son. This is terrible. How difficult it must have been when Isaac said, say, Dad, I'm out down with this worship and this sacrifice thing, but where's the animal we're going to sacrifice? Well, Isaac, you're it. Well, Abraham says, don't worry, God will provide. There are some people who criticize. They say, oh, you know what? Abraham was lying. He knew what he was going to do, and he wouldn't tell his own son the truth. But note at the end of verse 5, as they were nearing the spot, there's a point where Abraham told his servants to wait there while he and Isaac went ahead. And then he said this. He said, we will worship up there, and we will come back to you. Well, some critics will say, oh, he's still lying. I think he's telling the truth. I think that is what Abraham believed. He said, I now believe God is going to keep his promise. He's proven it to me. And so I don't know how this is going to work. God's going to provide some substitute or something. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 19, it says, Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead. He thought, this is going to be awful. I'm going to have to kill my son, but God's going to raise him from the dead. Because we're going up there, me and my son, and we're coming down, the two of us, alive, together. Because God has promised from this boy is going to come a great nation, and that can only happen if he's alive. And I believe God is going to keep that promise. That's what Abraham believed in his heart, and that's what enabled him to proceed with this sacrifice. And then at the end, we see the great story, God came to the rescue. Just as Abraham's about to do the deed, an angel stops him, says, hold it right there. Okay, far enough. Don't touch the boy. At that moment, Abraham spotted a ram. They sacrificed the ram, and God reiterates once again the great promise. I know that you believe. You have just shown that how much you trust in me, and so the promise is going to come true. Okay, well, that's all well and good, isn't it? What does that mean to us? You know, what are we supposed to do with this story? Well, this tells us several things. First of all, tests will come. This incident is about God testing Abraham's faith. And we need to know that we too are going to be tested. Things are going to happen in our lives, like I said, that are going to severely test our trust in God. You know, you look at this incident and it's totally shocking. It's totally mystifying. And that tells us that there are going to be things that God is going to allow in our lives that are going to be just like that. Completely shocking, mystifying. There's no way I can understand why God would allow something like this into the life of someone he loves. It will feel to us as though God is being cruel and he's asking us to slaughter the best things, the dearest things in our lives, things that are according to his will even. Abraham stands for every person of faith who at some point in his or her life is standing there going, surely this, you can't mean this, God. David wrote in Psalm 26, verse 2, test me, Lord, and try me. Examine my heart and my mind. He wrote a similar thing in Psalm 139, 23. He said, search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. God, test me. I know this is what has to happen. The Apostle Peter in 1 Peter 4:12 wrote, do not be surprised that the fiery ordeal has come upon you to test you as though some strange thing were happening to you. It's not strange when things happen that test your faith. That's part of the deal. You should expect that. That's what this story tells us. But that brings us back to this question. Why? Why does God test? You know, when you took tests in school, why did you take tests? Why did teachers give tests in school? Well, it's because the teacher wanted to find out if any of the material in the class had actually penetrated the thick skulls of the students. They need to find out, does this kid know anything, you know? Well, is that what's going on with God? No, listen to this. Isaiah 46, verse 10 quotes God saying, I make known the end from the beginning, from ancient times, what is still to come. That says, God knows everything that is going to happen from the end to the beginning, from the beginning to the end. He knows it all. What's still going to happen? God already knows that. In Psalm 44, verses 20 and 21, it says, if we had forgotten the name of our God and spread our hands to a foreign God, would not God have discovered it since he knows the secrets of the heart? Everything that we think is secret from God, that we haven't just, you know, other people don't know what we think. God does. He knows the secrets of our heart. So why would he have to test to see what's there? He already knows. He's known it since before the creation of the world. Psalm 66, verse 10 says, for you, God, tested us. You refined us like silver. Remember, we said, if God wasn't testing Abraham for God's sake, why was he testing him? It had to be for Abraham's sake. And here's the message. God tests to refine us. You know, how do you make silver more pure? Well, it involves the process of repeatedly heating it up until it's molten hot to get rid of impurities. It's what God's going to do in our lives as well. Why? Because he doesn't like us? Because he likes to play tricks on us? No, because he wants to refine us, to make us stronger and better. He wants us to be people who experience his peace and his love and his joy in greater and ever greater ways. And the only way he can do that is by putting us to the test. You know, my son, Toby, has been doing CrossFit training to keep in shape. I don't know if you're familiar with CrossFit. You're kind of seeing a pop up all over the place. It's an interesting approach to physical fitness. And CrossFit says this. It says it is an approach to exercise that is, quote, designed to elicit as broad an adaptational response as possible. And so the whole point of CrossFit is to put your body through basically all kinds of varying tests, so your body never quite is completely adapted to one test. And so CrossFit exercises might be things like one CrossFit workout might be you run a 200 meter sprint full speed, followed by doing as many bench presses as you can do in 1 minute. And then you do another 200 meter sprint, and then you come back and you do as many rowing exercises as you can do in 1 minute. And then you do the whole thing all over again 3 times. It's very different than just go out and do, you know, half hour on the bike and, you know, push some iron. It's just continually changing things and pushing you. Well, why would you do that? Because that's how the body gets stronger and more fit. It gets tested and pushed in ways that are uncomfortable. The philosophy is that the only way for us to get stronger is to be tested. Pushed. You know, you all know our son-in-law, Michael, is now a flight instructor. He's teaching young Navy and Marine pilots to become fighter pilots. It's interesting, he was telling us recently that a part of that process to make them pilots involves stressing them, pushing them into ways that are uncomfortable for them so that they can become better. In particular, one of the elements of the training that isn't comfortable for them is teaching them formation flying. Now, unfortunately, our projector isn't working this morning. Michael sent us a great picture that I wanted to use this morning. He had a picture that he took this week of his flying in formation with some of his students. The reason formation flying is uncomfortable for them is that they learn as a pilot that when you're first learning to fly, you want to stay as far from other objects in the sky as you possibly can. There's another object over there, you get away from it. And now all of a sudden, they get these kids up there in the plane, and they have to keep telling them, you got to get in there, you got to move closer, and they don't want to do that. You got to, and he says part of the problem is, of course, once they finally do it, they try to kill you. But, you know, it's, but, you know, I thought, I asked him, why is formation flying, you know, such a big deal? I mean, it's really cool when you see the Blue Angels, you know, flying by, six of them with, you know, 18 inches between the wingtips. It's like, that's cool. But, I mean, you know, why? Well, it's a very good reason. Let's suppose that you're on a mission and you're flying with a group of aircraft in your squadron and it's nighttime and you have no lights on and you're flying in heavy weather. How do you know where the other aircraft are? Well, you better be able to see them, and the only way you can do that is by getting right up next to them. You got to learn to do that, and that's really uncomfortable. And so the only way they can be trained to be a fighter pilot is you got to push them and test them to get up in there. Get up. You got to get closer. You got to get closer. I don't want to get closer. I'm going to hit him. Get the picture? It's everywhere in life. How do you get stronger and better? You get tested. And God says, in order for you to experience peace the way I want you to experience and the way you want to experience, the only way you can experience joy the way you want to experience joy, the only way that you can become godly, the only way you can glorify me, and the only way you can learn to love the way I want you to love and you want to love, is by being pushed, by being tested over and over so you are refined. That's the deal. For a variety of reasons, chief of them being that we lived on one income, a pastor's income, for a very long time in a very expensive area here. When it came time for our daughter to go to college, we did not have a large college fund saved up to draw from because we'd been just, you know, getting by. A familiar story. So all of a sudden, here's Carissa. She's in her last semester of high school. She gets accepted to college, and I'm looking out, and I'm thinking, so how much is this going to cost? And then you get this thing. Here's the expected family contribution. Oh, man, how much do we have saved up for this? Let's see. It looks like $2.75, because that's what's in the little dish where I put my change, you know. That's about all we got. What are we going to do? Well, we prayed. We said, God, how are we going to provide for a daughter's college education? Well, Carissa got some significant scholarship money, which got the figure down to no way on God's green earth we're going to be able to pay this amount of money, you know. And so I went to work, and I worked so hard to come up with this plan. We came up with a plan where if we could save money, we cut back here, we cut back there, we save this and we save that. And if everything goes right, if this money comes in, if this happens and that happens, if everything goes just right, we can get within about $2,000 for her first year. And so we're going to just trust that somehow God will give us that $2,000. And, oh, man, this is going to be exciting. And that's just to get through 1 year. Wow, this is going to be wild. Well, it took about 2 months into it when everything that had to go right went totally wrong. And things we hadn't even conceived of went wrong. I mean, everything went wrong. And it was like, and I realized, you know what? Carissa's college education is going to consist of one semester because that's about all we can do, you know. And finally, we just said, God, we have no answer, but we think Carissa needs to get through college. We think this is what you want us to do. Could you provide? And you know what? It was amazing. Weird things started happening. Good things that we could never have imagined. Money came from some of the most unexpected and bizarre places. And we got through the end of that first year, and we managed to pay for it. It was like, wow, it wasn't because of our discipline. It wasn't because of our plan, our great. God just provided. We went, wow, that was really cool. Problem was, now we had to do it again. There was another year coming. So we got through those first couple of years. After her third year, they upped the ante on us. Toby graduated from high school, and now we're going to have two going to college. But there was a really interesting thing that happened to me. In his last semester of high school, I'm looking out and I'm thinking, well, now we have, you know, that many thousand. Now we're going to have another one in college that we got to pay for. And you know what? I wasn't stressed at all. It was like, yeah, don't worry, we'll get through it. You know why? Because we had been tested and tested and tested, and God had proven faithful. And by the third year, or the going into the fourth year, we were able to say, yeah, we're at peace. We're going to get through this. God's going to take care of it. We don't know how, but somehow God provides, and we're going to trust. The testing of going through and seeing God providing increased our faith to the point where when the issue was even larger, we weren't stressed because God had built our faith through the tests. So God is going to test you. Just accept that. That's how life is going to go, because that's how we grow in our faith. That's how we experience peace and joy. That's how we learn to love more. That's how we learn to glorify God more, is through being tested. But now here is the thing that we need to really grab onto that is the real issue here. The test is about going all in. What do you mean by that? You know what? I'm not a poker player. However, I've heard the expression all in a lot, and I've seen it on, you know, TV shows and stuff. It's when one player in a poker game has all these chips in front of him, and it gets down to the critical point of the game, and he pushes all of his chips to the center. I'm betting it all. I'm going all in. That is what God wants from every single one of us. God, I'm taking all my chips, everything in my life, and I'm putting it on the table, and I'm going all in on you. That's what Abraham was asked to do. The most important thing in his life was that child. And God says, I want you to put him in the middle of the table and see, are you going to go all in? And Abraham said yes. Maybe you saw the article about professional gambler Dave Awansia. I don't know if you saw this article. He's a guy that makes some pretty outlandish claims. Some of them are dubious, but he makes one that's absolutely true. It's been verified. Back in April of this year, he made a series of bets totaling $100,000 that the Kansas City Royals would win the World Series this year before the season ever started. Well, guess what? He got down to, got through the whole season, got through the playoffs, the World Series is about to start, and he was offered an opportunity to hedge his bet. And he could hedge his bet and be guaranteed of winning $750,000. And he said, no. All in on the Kansas City Royals. Won $2,457,000. Because he went all in. God asks that of us with everything in our lives. Exodus 20, verse 3. One of his first commandments, he says, you shall have no other gods before me. I don't want anything to come before me in your life. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5 says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. I want every part of you. Jesus said, that is the most important commandment. The number one thing in life is, are you willing to go all in on God? You know, it's all too common for us to kind of want to hedge our bets. I like God, you know, I believe he's cool, you know, he and I are cool, you know, the Jesus thing, that's good, we're good here. But you know what, I kind of want to take care of myself here, so I got some things I really want to do with my life. And God comes along and says, no other gods before me, all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, are you willing to go all in? Are you willing to put it all up there on the altar? That's what he's telling us. That's what's going to be tested. Perhaps you remember Karen Watson. She was the missionary who was killed in Iraq a few years ago. And before she went to Iraq, she wrote a letter, sealed letter, sent it to her pastor and said, this should only be opened in the event of my death. While she was killed there. And so here's what she wrote in that letter. You should be opening this letter in the event of my death. When God calls, there are no regrets. To obey was my objective. To suffer was expected. His glory was my reward. Care more than some think is wise. Risk more than some think is safe. Dream more than some think is practical. Expect more than some think is possible. I was called not to comfort or success, but to obedience. She was all in. She passed the ultimate test. To obey God was her objective, and her reward was his glory, she said. That's going all in. I guarantee you there are going to be times in your life when you're going to be holding on tightly to something that you believe you absolutely must have, and God doesn't let you have it. You've been committed to obeying God, but now, man, I don't know if I can trust God anymore because I have to have this thing. Yeah, you're committed to not standing on the reef, but now it's time to stand on the reef. This is a test. God is asking, are you willing to go all in? You know, not long ago, one of those really hot days we had recently, I was in my study at home and I was working and the window was open. And outside, I could hear some kids in the neighborhood playing. And I heard this one little girl just belting out a song. Yeah, guess what it was? Let it go, you know. Are you tired of hearing that song yet? Let it go, let it go. Yeah, would you let it go? You know, get it. You know, I'm not really all that a big fan of that. The message of, you look at some of the words of that song, I'm not crazy, but there's a little bit of a message there that we all need to hear. Are you willing to let it go? Because here's the thing about life. There's a truth about life that we don't really like to hear, but a lot of it is about letting go. In fact, fundamental to really being free in life is learning to let go. Here's why. You know, in the early stages of life, life is about adding things. You know, you start off, you're a baby, and you start adding things. You add the ability to walk, and then you add the ability to talk, and then you add the ability to tie your shoes, and to read, and to add, and subtract, and then you start adding strength, and size, and coordination. You start adding all kinds of things, ability to play sports or a musical instrument. Eventually, you add the ability to drive a car. And then as you continue to grow into adulthood, you add people into your lives. You add a spouse and you add children. You're adding these things into your life. It's getting bigger and bigger and better and better. But we've all heard the expression over the hill, right? You know, the thing about a hill is you go up and you go up and you go up, and somewhere up there, there's a peak, and you hit that peak, and once you go beyond that peak, what happens? Oh, you're going down. And that's exactly what happens in life. You're adding, you're adding, you're adding, but there comes a point, and it's fairly early in life, actually, when all of a sudden, you start taking things away. You know, athletes understand this. You know, when their ages start with a 1 or a 2, they're adding, they're adding, they're adding. When their ages start with a 3, you know, 30-something, oh, they start taking away. I'm not as strong, I'm not as fast, not quite as good as I used to be. And all of us have been there. And then, you know, there's that day when all of a sudden you pick up something to read and the print is too small to read. You know, what's going on here? Something's being taken away from you. And slowly... and once that hair, yes, I know. I used to have a lot. And it doesn't come back. You know, and the problem is that it keeps going away. And other stuff does too. You know, I remember just the idea of there was a time in my life when I would get up in the morning and I would feel good, you know. And now, every time you get up in the morning, something hurts, you know, and something doesn't work quite right, and stuff is taken away. And it's about learning to let go. The only way you can be joyful in life is to say, I'm not going to hang on to that stuff and be, you know, there's going to be a time in your life. You know, you have these little kids in your life, and the sun rises and sets on mom and dad. They want nothing more than mom and dad's attention. And then they grow up and they have the temerity to have their own lives. And they love mom and dad, but, you know, frankly, mom and dad don't care matter that much anymore. They go off and you think, well, you got to let go, you know. It's about letting go. Someday, you know, you've had this job and people look up to you and you're important. And all of a sudden, you're out of that job and nobody cares what you think anymore. And you feel kind of useless. Are you willing to let go of that too? You see, it happens in life. The core to being at peace with wherever we are in life is to be able to say to God, it's all yours. I'm willing to let go. All of it. Whatever you say, God, I'm all in on you. Here's the thing that you need to know. Passing the test requires faith. What enabled Abraham to pass his test? What kept him from balking when God asked the seemingly impossible? It was that he had hope, and his hope was, I now know God is going to keep his promise to make a great nation from my son Isaac. So I don't understand what's going on, but I know I can trust God that he will keep his promise to me. You know, have you noticed when we went through this, we've been going through this study of the life of Abraham, this strange thing that happens. God tells Abraham from the get-go, going to make a great nation from you. I'm going to bless the whole world from the nation. Abraham doesn't have any children. God says, I'm going to give you a son. And Abraham waits, and Abraham waits, and no son shows up. And so he says, well, God, there's no son. Is this guy my servant, Eliezer? He's supposed to be my heir. No, Abraham, I'm going to give you a son. Yeah, but it's been years. Where's the son? Nothing happens. Finally, Sarah says, you know, I guess God wants us to, you know, God helps those who help themselves. Let's help ourselves here. Why don't you sleep with my servant Hagar and we'll have a son that way. God says, wrong, out. Still waiting. Time goes by. Years go by. 25 years pass until Abraham and Sarah are too old and now it's impossible for them to have a son. And God says, okay, now you're going to have the child. And they did. So here's the question. Why? Why did they have to wait and wait and wait and wait? It's because when that child finally came, Abraham said, well, now I know. You can trust God because he'll keep his promise even when it's impossible. So I will never again doubt God because he's proven that he'll keep his word. So when the test with Isaac comes, Abraham didn't even blink because he believed God. His faith had been built. God hasn't promised us a life of ease and comfort. He's not promised that everything will go our way. What he has promised us is that we can have a life of love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and faithfulness and hope as we trust in him, no matter what our circumstances are. He's promised us life to the fullest. How do we get that life? There are going to be moments in your life when you're tempted to think it's something that I have to do. I have to get. I'm going to get all that stuff, love and joy and peace and patience from my circumstances. And God's going to take those circumstances away so that you can find out, no, that's not where it comes from. It comes from me and trusting in me. You know, an interesting thing about this story, when you read the story of the sacrifice or the story of Isaac and the command to sacrifice him, there are scholars who will say, oh, look at all the parallels between Isaac and Jesus. He was the son that was promised, you know. He went up on the mountain of Jerusalem, you know. He was going to be sacrificed and all these things. They draw the parallel between Isaac and Jesus. But the fact is, I don't see that parallel working out very well because Isaac wasn't sacrificed, but Jesus was. That's a big difference. Here's the parallel. The son was condemned when there was nothing that he had done. He was supposed to die. We're the son. We're Isaac. We're the beloved child who's condemned to die. And God provides a substitute. In our case, the substitute with Jesus. But here's the thing. Abraham never knew that part of the story. What God was doing in Abraham's life through Isaac was teaching us something that Abraham never knew. God may be doing something in our lives that we'll never understand, but that he will use incredibly in the lives of other people. Our job is to trust and to believe that God is good and he is the source of life. Lori and I, as we neared the end of August this year, were excited. We had planned what was for us a dream vacation. I've told you this before. We were going to spend 5 days in Hawaii with the four most amazing people in the world, our kids and their spouses that we love to death. We'd long dreamed of doing this, and finally it was going to happen. We're so excited about it. About 5 or 6 days before we were going to leave, a friend said to me, hey, did you see that there's a hurricane headed for Hawaii? I said, oh, yeah, that's cute, you know. I said, no, look it up. I looked it up, and I went, oh, there's a hurricane headed for Hawaii. Oh, no, that can't be. Hurricanes, you know, they have hurricanes in Hawaii like once every 30 years. You gotta be kidding me. It's going now? Come on. You know, you had those moments. And as I started looking and I started tracking, we got closer and closer. And it was like, the hurricane is going to hit right when we're supposed to be there. And I started worrying, we're not even going to be able to go because you can't fly into a hurricane. I called the airlines. They said, we don't know. It's like, not what you want to hear, you know. And You know, you go through that kind of thing when you go, this is something we've dreamed of, we've planned, we've paid some money for already, we can't change it, there's no wiggle room. Really, God? This is what you're, a hurricane? Are you kidding me? You know, you have those times when it's like, you're out to get me, aren't you? You know? You ever feel like that? It's just like, you're doing this just to tweak my nose. So, you know, we prayed, and we got closer to, they finally called the airlines and said, no, you're going to be able to get in. It's like, okay, good. But then I looked at the weather report. Oh, great. We're going to have a vacation in Hawaii when there's a hurricane. Great. We're going to sit in our hotel room and watch the rain and the wind blowing. This is really great. And I mean, you looked in the weather report every day. It was going to be horrible, raining, windy, bleh, you know, and I thought, you know, I was so frustrated, but there finally came a point where I realized God saying, say, dude, you all in on this deal or not? I wanted to kind of be mad at the Lord because I thought, this is kind of a dirty trick you're pulling on us, you know? And God said, well, are you willing to let it go? And I finally had to say, okay, you know what, Lord? I don't understand why you would allow something like this to happen. I mean, just, you know, we just wanted to have a fun time with our family, but if this is what you want, then we'll make the best of it. And I know somehow you have something that is going to be good in our lives as a result of this. Maybe it'll be a sermon illustration, you know? And I let go. And you know what was amazing was? It was like, okay, I'm not excited about it, but I can be at peace. And I was at peace. Right up until the time we were about to get on the airplane and it suddenly hit me. We're going to be flying by a hurricane. We're going to have the worst trip ever. And I started thinking, oh no, oh no, this is going to be awful. And finally I said, okay, you know, Lori and I once years ago went on a flight back to Florida and we skimmed past a tropical storm. You know the ride Tower of Terror up there? That was it. And I thought, oh no, this is going to be 5 hours of, we're going to hate it. You know, it was really interesting. One point we're on the flight, we're getting near it's about an hour left. The pilot comes on the intercom and he says, ladies and gentlemen, if you look out the right side of the aircraft, you can see Hurricane Ignacio. I said, oh, great. He said, I've instructed the flight attendants to be seated and to strap in. We are about to experience severe turbulence. Have you ever been on a plane when they say that? I thought, oh no. I said, okay, God, if this is what you want, I'm going to let it go. The most amazing thing happened. We went through that flight. We had one little boop, boop, boop. That was it. Smooth as silk. We got to Hawaii. We had great weather. It was beautiful. We had, after the kids left, Lori and I stayed. We had one day where it rained. And it was on Saturday when there was college football on TV all day. It was hallelujah, God answers prayer. Anyway, my point here is that the way I was able to experience peace was by saying, okay, God, it's yours. Let it go. That's a trivial thing, but here's the thing. I've also been in a situation where I've had a child, an infant son in the intensive care unit in the hospital. The stakes are way bigger, but the principle is exactly the same. Are we willing to go all in with the Lord? That's what God calls of us. And here's the thing. It is the only way to ever be at peace and have joy in life. Let's close in prayer. Father, we all struggle with this question every day of our lives in so many ways. There are so many things that we don't want to let go of. And we confess to you that in many cases we've gripped them way harder than we should. And in fact, it is our struggle to hold on to them that creates all of the stress and all of the pain in our own lives. And it creates damage in our relationships with other people. And it certainly keeps us from serving you. We see it, Father. And we recognize that we're weak. And so we pray that you'll help us to remember the picture of Abraham going all in, even with his own beloved son, his only son that he loved. Father, help us to see that he was trusting you to do something amazing in that situation that he could never even have imagined, and you did that. That we are still learning from that experience thousands of years later. Help us, Lord, then, to remember that truth and to go all in and to trust you no matter what. Help us to just let it go. Amen.